Welcome to As a Woman, Fertility Hormones and Beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and I am a board-certified OBGYN and fertility physician, and also co-founder of Fora Fertility in Austin, Texas. Each week on this podcast, I discuss health and fertility and how they relate to your true self. Become a part of the community of collaboration that amplifies others as a woman. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, friends, and welcome to the As a Woman podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford. I'm a board-certified OBGYN and REI, so I'm a fertility doctor, and I talk about eggs, sperm, ovaries, fertility, hormones, health, every single day, all the time. Today, I want to talk about the concept of personalized fertility care. When I put up a question box, when I ask you what you want me to talk about, the number one thing that I am getting now, which is crazy because I've been online for a really long time, is your cycle. I am getting results. You're telling me what you went through and what your outcome was, and you're asking how to make it better, which is fine. This is what your doctor, your care team should be doing. Not every cycle is going to be perfect. I'm not going to act like we're always going to know everything. But the one thing that is so striking to me is how often you're not getting that opportunity to get feedback from your team, whether it's a WTF meeting, whether it's a portal message, an email, a phone call, whatever your clinic style is, or somebody is analyzing what happened and then taking the time to say, for you, I would now do X, Y, and Z. And because people aren't doing this, and they're not doing it because it takes time, if you want to try to push through as many cycles as possible, you're not going to be in the place where you're sitting here over and over again going through people's cycles and giving them feedback. But that is such a disservice. The top thing I see for second opinion is somebody who went to a clinic somewhere in the country and has done multiple cycles that really didn't change anything. They didn't make any assessment or anything personalized. So this puts the burden on you to understand what is normal, what is happening, where things can be better, what the expectations are, and really, you must be a good advocate for your own fertility care at a lot of places. And a huge disclaimer, it's not everywhere. There are some fantastic places. I'm biased, and I think our practice for fertility is one of them, and there are other places that are great. But you don't know when you walk in the door of the fertility clinic down the street if this is just how it is and this is how people treat you. So how are you going to know if it's different unless we don't talk about it? So today we're going to break down not just IVF, but all fertility care in general. What does it mean to have personalized care? How do you advocate for yourself the best? What questions does that mean? And really just giving you the information you need to have the best fertility journey. I tell my patients all the time that I can't 100% control the outcome. Trust me, I try. I try so hard to make sure everything works and that we get pregnant or whatever our goal is, we freeze eggs, we freeze embryos. But this is a wild field. In our best scenarios, with a great embryo, we often are looking at a 65% chance of success. So we have to understand that often what I'm really trying to set you up for is that you understood your body, you knew what we were doing, your questions were answered, and you felt confident every step of the process that we were doing absolutely everything we could. And in fact, yesterday I posted on Instagram one of the posts on our Fora page from a patient of my partner, Dr. Skillern's. And in a response to it, Dr. Skillern wrote, "No one will try harder or care more." And that really encompasses what we are trying to do and why we even started Fora. Because we've been at different practices, and being able to have that personal approach was so important to us for each patient to experience. And we're not the only ones, but you deserve to know what options are available out there. So we're going to dive into a few things when it comes to personalized fertility care and what that means and what you should know. At the end of this episode, we will be doing For Fertility's Sake, FFS. This is the weekly Q&A segment where I answer some of your fertility questions. These are questions that you asked on Instagram on Monday at Natalie Crawford MD. These questions will be answered some right on Instagram, some in the newsletter, which you can sign up for at nataliecrawfordmd.com/newsletter, and some right here at the end of the podcast episodes. You can also call and leave those questions. You can leave your questions at 657-229-3672. Again, that is 657-229-3672. Over on the website, if you check out nataliecrawfordmd.com, you can find out information about the courses, the YouTube channel. You can search the resources section, sign up for the newsletter, and you can also find links to Fora Fertility, our fertility practice, and then Pinnacle Conference. Pinnacle is our leadership organization for women in medicine. Our annual conference is happening next month, and I'm so excited. If you are a woman in medicine, please check it out. You're going to want to sign up for the email list, the community, even if you can't come to this meeting, because we have some really, really exciting things coming up in the future. When you go to schedule an appointment with a fertility clinic, you're going to enter into care one of a few different ways. One is going to be, you just want to see us. For whatever reason, you know something's wrong, or you want testing, or you want the option to preserve your fertility. One big misconception is that you have to have a referral and a doctor has to send you to a doctor. And there's a few insurances, if you have an HMO plan, that do require that to cover that initial visit, but that has to be your primary care doctor, not your OBGYN, and we can help call them and get them to send it. So if you want to see us, you can go to the website, you can pick up the phone, and you can say, I want to be seen. And what are reasons that you can be seen? Probably the most common is, I'm having infertility or I'm not getting pregnant. The normal periods of time when you should seek an evaluation is going to be if you're under age 35 and you've been trying to get pregnant for a year, if you are 35 to 40 and you've been trying to get pregnant for 6 months, and if you're 40 and over and you want to be pregnant or been trying 3 months, really we want to see you much quicker if you're older. Those guidelines are making a bunch of presumptions, and a couple of these are really important to understand. If you have irregular or absent periods, come on down. If you know you have a low egg count, whether it was checked in the past, whether you lost an ovary potentially, you had chemotherapy, you have known bad endometriosis, those things can all impact your ovarian reserve, and you should schedule a visit sooner. If you're having difficulty with intercourse, whether it's painful or there's difficulty with erection or ejaculation, if you can't have sperm and egg close together at the ovulatory time, you should schedule an appointment. So most people are coming in because they've been trying to get pregnant and they haven't achieved it, and they've been trying for a set amount of time, or something's wrong. So irregular cycles, something of that nature. If you're having pregnancy loss, so the workup for pregnancy loss should now start if you've had two losses in a row. So if you've had two losses, you should now either go to a fertility doctor or your OBGYN to start the evaluation to try to figure out if there is a physiologic cause of your pregnancy loss. Is it just bad luck, which can happen? Is it age? Much more common. But it also could be clotting disorders, genetics, autoimmune disease, endocrine issues, sperm issues. So definitely worth getting an evaluation because some of those things are treatable. Then we see people who just want testing. Maybe they're trying, maybe they want to try soon. Maybe they're getting older. They're going to get married, but they want to travel the world and not get pregnant yet. And we see people who want to preserve fertility. So they come in knowing they want to freeze embryos or eggs because they're not quite ready yet, but they really view having a child as a life goal. And you know I'm a huge fan of that.
And now a word from one of our sponsors, Ritual.
Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? But women belong in scientific research. They're essential, and Ritual knows this. I choose Ritual Multivitamin every day because it is easy to take, and I know that I am getting high quality and traceable ingredients in a clean and bioavailable forms. In fact, Ritual conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy, and the results showed increase in vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin that you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/AAW. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/AAW for 25% off. Thank you, Ritual. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Apostrophe. With the temperature starting to warm up, I'm so excited that summer is around the corner and getting ready and looking forward to the summer months. But I know that when I'm outside enjoying nature, I need to pick up supplies to prepare myself for summer adventures. And if you want to get your skin glowing in time for summer, it's time for you to get started with Apostrophe, who is sponsoring this episode. Apostrophe's goal is to help you feel confident in your own skin. So whether you're dealing with breakouts, signs of aging, or acne scarring, Apostrophe will help you love the skin you're in. I personally love that you get access to an expert dermatology team, a tailored treatment plan. It's simple to sign up for your first visit, and there is no in-person appointment or trip to the pharmacy needed. We have a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit for only $5 at apostrophe.com/AAW when you use our code AAW. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/AAW and click Get Started. Then use the code AAW at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. So you can just call us. You might be seeing your OBGYN or your PCP and somebody might say, hey, you need to see a fertility doctor. This is abnormal. Or I can't help you anymore. Or I've done what I can. And they might send a referral over. So you might decide you want to come on your own, or a doctor may send you over, or you may have gone other places and you're just not getting the care you want, and now you want to come for a second opinion. The number of people that I see for a second opinion, and Dr. Skillern, my partner, we see a high number of second opinion patients from all over the country, and I think it is because we do offer something a little bit different. But here's the thing, and I don't want you to get frustrated about this. If you've had fertility treatment done, you've done cycles, you need to know that you want your doctor to have all the records available, because this entire episode is about personalizing fertility care. That means, one, a workup was done and we have the results to have all the data available. We can't skip steps and then want to have personalized care if we don't have all the data. My patients know I am a data nerd. I want it all. I want to know that we know everything we can know so that we can make the best choices moving forward. If you're coming to me fresh, you got nothing, you've never had an evaluation, you've never done treatment, awesome. I'll do it all. No problem. If you've had some treatment, I want it. I want the records. If that means I don't have them, I'm going to wait to see you until I do. If that means you've had a bunch of tests done, you're curious about them, you've had a bunch of blood work, a semen analysis, we want those records if you're asking me for a second opinion about them. I'm always looking for opportunities where I can put you in control and in the driver's seat. So personalized fertility care, to me, it goes both ways. I only know what you share with me. So number one, you need to make an appointment anytime you have a concern something is wrong. Fertility doctors, we're on your team, okay? So number one, schedule the appointment. We're not scary. We do all of our first visits on telemedicine. Very low-hanging fruit. Number two, you've got to prepare for success, meaning help get the records. If you've had blood work done, you've had testing done, you've had treatment done, you're going to have to fill out record release forms. We're going to have to submit them. They can take up to 30 days to get us your records. So if you do that the night before your appointment, and then I have an appointment, I'm not going to have those records by then. It takes up to 30 days. You might have copies though on your portal. Maybe you had a printed out copy of your cycle. So you might be able to actually facilitate getting records faster by copies that you have or calling the clinic where you had the testing done. Next is filling out the health history questionnaire accurately, completely. Ours is online. I know in our brain, because I'm old, I still think about this as I walk into the doctor's office and they're going to give me a clipboard of paper and a pen and I'm gonna sit down and fill out all my history. Well, we have you do that online. Every clinic has you do it differently. You would be shocked how many times people skip it. They skip full questions or they omit things. They lie. I don't think they intentionally lie, but they just click no, 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 no. And then when we get on the call, there's a completely different story that we didn't know. We look at that. We look at it to make sure that we have the records we think we need based on what you've had done. We look at it to understand your goals, to see if you and your partner are aligned, if you have a partner, and to make sure that we're prepared for what we're going to talk about. You may not know this, but in our world, in the world of personalized fertility care, we're not rolling into consults blind. We are actually making sure that we've got all the information. I review all your history, your partner's history, any testing you've been done, your health history questionnaire, your goals, your answers to everything, a day or two or three before I see you, so that I make sure I'm ready and I know what we're going to talk about and I really know you and your history well. We'll still touch on it to make sure I'm not missing anything, but I want the bulk of our hour together to be on education and game time decision making. Okay, and you should be prepared as well, right? Personalized care goes both ways. So what that means is that you're going to think about what questions you have before the visit. You're going to write them down. You're going to think about what type of visit this is. So if it's a telemedicine visit, like with us, you have a computer, you have a quiet place, your internet's working, you're not in your car driving while we're trying to have the consult. Or if you're going to the clinic, where is the clinic? How long will it take you to go there? If you have a partner, are they able to join? I want you to maximize your time during the consult. So don't waste time of the consult trying to get on or trying to connect. And I promise we're trying to get in the room as soon as possible or get to that consult as soon as possible. What we want to do in that consult, it's not scary. You're going to be open and honest. You're going to talk about your goals, what you've been through, things that may concern you. You're going to review your history, any treatment you've done. I then talk about fertility a lot. So does my partner. So we're going to explain tests that you've had or tests we're going to do, some basics about how the ovary works, some basics about your chances of getting pregnant and what's going to come next, whether it's next steps of testing or next steps of treatment. Your treatment options in a fertility clinic are relatively small. This is shocking to most people, but let's be honest. The general workup is going to include a consultation, an ultrasound, blood work, a semen analysis, and some further evaluation of anatomy for most people, whether it is an HSG x-ray test or a FemView test to see the fallopian tubes. If you're coming in, we're doing testing and following up. That's what we're doing. Takes about a month, and then you'll have a follow-up. If you've already had pieces of that done, or we know some information, then that journey may look different. Maybe you don't have fallopian tubes because you had ectopic pregnancies, or maybe because of your age and the number of kids you want, you're going to fast track to get some embryos in the freezer so that you can have that second baby. So understanding your goals and what you've been through is key to what happens next. I end the visits with you knowing what needs to happen. You're going to come in for this and this. Your next steps are XYZ. If your doctor doesn't tell you that, I gave you a question. Here you go. What are my next steps? What needs to happen next? So you can ask them. Is it call with your period, talk to the financial team, get me your records, schedule the ultrasound, do a semen analysis? Whatever it is, I want you to think about a list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What do I need to do to keep the train moving? Based on those tests, we're going to have the options of fertility treatment, which essentially can include medications for endocrine disorders like thyroid, prolactin, diabetes, surgery for anatomic abnormalities, mostly polyps, fibroid, septums, ovulation induction, medications to make you ovulate if you are not ovulating consistently. These are typically oral medications like Clomid and Letrozole. Both of these medications tell the brain to send out more FSH, so it's an indirect pathway to try to get you to have a stronger signal to grow an egg. But because it's indirect, it might take you a little bit of time, or it may take a month or two, to actually find a dose that you're going to respond to. And in fact, for PCOS, the higher your AMH, the more eggs you have, the harder it actually is to ovulate to these oral medications. And in fact, some people are refractory and don't, and they have to advance care. We also have an IUI, which is intrauterine insemination. This is where we take sperm, wash it, and put it in the uterus. I like to say, move your players further down the field. This can be a great option for people who need donor sperm, have motility issues, have difficulty with intercourse, who have timing issues, maybe based on work, travel. And then sometimes it can be used for mild male factor or for unexplained infertility. And for unexplained specifically, it is in combination with medications to get you to ovulate, but to ovulate more than one egg. So you have ovulation induction with intercourse or IUI, and you have IUI in a natural cycle or with ovulation induction or superovulation. And then we have IVF and its different versions. Egg freezing is the first step of IVF. Those eggs will be fertilized in the lab, in vitro, later on in life. You've got InvoCell, which is a type of IVF, more of a minimal stem protocol, where you're purposefully understimulating somebody to only get 8 to 10 eggs, putting them in a little incubator and incubating it in your vagina, and then you're taking out an embryo and transferring it. Pros and cons: InvoCell improves access to care. It's cheaper, but you get less data. I'm a data person. And it's not for everybody. You can't do ICSI. You can't put a sperm inside an egg. You don't get to see the embryos in the culture process. You're purposefully getting under somebody's potential. That might come back and bite you. And you're not doing genetic testing of the embryos. So it is a very specific patient type in my mind who qualifies for this, namely somebody who is young and either needs donor sperm or has tubal factor and has really normal sperm parameters. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Quince. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune, and luckily I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. The best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands, but Quince partners directly with top factories, cutting out the cost of the middleman, passing the saving to us, and only working with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. I personally cannot wait to wear my cute tan linen set this summer. So it's your turn to get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/AAW for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/AAW to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/AAW. Thank you, Quince. And then you have more traditional IVF, and even that has changed immensely. So when I like to think about IVF in a short sentence, it's getting a group of eggs to grow. And then you're going to take those eggs out of the body in a procedure. And then they're going to be in the lab where they get fertilized and grow into embryos. Getting them to grow is typically done with medications called gonadotropins. These are hormone shots, same shots, like your brain sends out FSH and LH, just in higher than normal doses. It generally takes about 2 weeks of gonadotropins to get those eggs to grow. The egg retrieval is done under anesthesia. It's a procedure. It takes about 20 minutes. A needle is placed through the vagina while watching with ultrasound as you enter into every follicle and drain that follicular fluid and get test tubes full of eggs. Those eggs then go to the lab where you can either have conventional fertilization, think petri dish, eggs are in it, You just drop sperm on top, cover it, put it in the incubator, or ICSI. ICSI is where an embryologist looks under a microscope, picks a good-looking sperm, and puts it into each egg. ICSI is strongly preferred for male factor or unexplained infertility, especially in the setting of no fertilization. From there, the embryos grow in the lab. And this is really why IVF improves pregnancy rates in my mind, because that early embryo development, those first 5 to 6 days of embryonic life, the embryo is really sensitive to the world around it. And in the lab, it's the perfect temperature, pH, everything. And that's not our body. So we grow embryos. Olden days, embryos could only make it to day 3. Now it is very standard to take your embryos to day 5 or 6. That's a blastocyst. That's the normal day of implantation. You lose about half the eggs from fertilization to blastocyst stage, but by getting them to blast, stronger, higher pregnancy rates, and ultimately allows you to have a shorter time to pregnancy. From there, you can do a fresh transfer where you take an embryo and put it back in the body and save the rest. That is not done nearly as much anymore. One, because the high hormone levels of the IVF process for the average person is going to make it harder for that embryo to implant. A freeze-all approach where those embryos are frozen, you bleed off that endometrium that was exposed to the high hormones, and then we prepare you for a frozen embryo transfer where the hormone levels are more natural. We still may use hormones to grow the lining, but it's in a much more controlled environment. And we warm up one embryo and then put it in your body. That's an FET or frozen embryo transfer. Candidates for a fresh transfer tend to be younger patients with low ovarian reserve who don't have an indication for genetic testing. If you do genetic testing of embryos, this is when it happens, before they're frozen. A few cells are taken from that placental segment, sent off for testing. Embryos are frozen and you wait for the results, and then you can get to transfer subsequently when you have a normal one. So for most of my patients, I view IVF, grow eggs, take them out of the body, fertilize them, make embryos, and then the embryo transfer, FET, frozen embryo transfer, get the body ready, thaw an embryo, and put it inside. So there's a lot of choices, but also not a lot of choices at the same time. Medications, surgery, ovulation induction, IUI, IVF, the end. It's really important you have a boundary of what you're doing and where your check-ins are. So another piece of advice, you talk to your doctor, you have unexplained infertility, you decide to try IUI with ovulation induction, super ovulation. Well, how many times are you doing it? What is the goal number of follicles you're shooting for? What is the cycle going to be canceled for or not? And what's going to happen if you don't achieve the goal of pregnancy in the set timeline? That's important info for you. How are you going to get feedback on the cycle? So every cycle where we're following you, we're monitoring you, we have a goal. So are we just trying to get 1 to 2 eggs? Are we looking for 2 or 3 or 3 or 4? What's our goal? What's the canceled number? How many are we doing if we're not pregnant before we need to do something else? What is that something else? Do we have to have a follow-up? Just know the boundaries of what we're trying to achieve. If it's IVF, most of the entire discussion of personalized care comes into play when it comes to the protocol. And a lot of this is that providers, doctors aren't giving patients the information they need to properly evaluate their cycle. So the goal of a protocol is to try to get the highest number of mature eggs as possible. This means I'm trying to get all of those eggs to grow forward. So you need to know, one, what's your potential? This is your antral follicle count, your ovarian reserve. As a part of your evaluation, I know we're checking AMH, which is a blood test, and probably having an ultrasound, and you're getting a follicle count done. From that follicle count, we should be able to have an idea of how many eggs we might get. Now, this can change 30% month to month, so yeah, it's not perfect, but it's a starting point. That protocol is putting us in this category of response, where you're going to be a high responder, normal, a little bit low, critically low. And in my opinion, you should have a different protocol based on which of these situations you're falling into. some clinics, and I'll always say this is the huge red warning flag sign. This is our protocol. This is the protocol we always do. That is lazy, friends. They do that protocol always because their nurses or their team can just make one calendar. It's easier to evaluate, to order the meds. You don't have to think or personalize anything. That may work for 70% of the people. But for some people, you're using your money, your time really ineffectively, and it's sad. So it's not your job to pick the protocol. And you may not know. How do I know if my team always does the same protocol? If they don't say those words, this is the protocol we always do. You may not know, and that's okay. Even when we're picking the most personalized protocol ever, it's not perfect. I have a patient right now who I can't get her suppressed on the protocol I want. So I'm going to have to switch things up. So that is evaluating if the protocol is working. So you have selection of the protocol and then evaluating it. The red flag, if your team isn't telling you this is our protocol, is that if you don't get a response that seems appropriate, you do the exact same thing. If you're not getting an appropriate response, one, you have to know what that is, but two, that's the really, really important time where we can make small changes and see huge differences. So what's your antral follicle count? You might not get exactly that number, but that's a good reference point. When we're trying to get these eggs to grow, we're going against nature. Your body just wants to ovulate that one egg, and I would like 16 if that's your antral follicle count. So I have to override the brain and ovary connection. And I have a lot. I have whole episodes on protocol. I have a whole IVF course, a little mini course that's very easy that goes into protocol in depth. But the goal, the art, the fun part of IVF is trying to pick a protocol that's going to get the job done. For a lot of patients, this includes leading into the cycle with what I call suppression, meaning I'm going to stop your brain from sending out FSH, which is follicle stimulating hormone and what gets the egg to grow. And then I'm going to come in and stimulate them with those gonadotropins. The protocol is actually named for this combination of suppression stimulation. So you can suppress before the cycle or during. You have to suppress ovulation so you don't ovulate through. This can be before the cycle, birth control pills, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, ovulation blockers, Lupron, and combinations of the above. And you can do spontaneous starts off your period. Not my favorite, but occasionally it's the best thing. Stimulating is really quite similar in most patients. Mostly FSH. Some combo FSH-LH. Remember, you can't have LH alone. We don't have a purified LH. And sometimes there's additional aspects on the protocol. So maybe it's human growth hormone. Maybe there is some Clomid or Letrozole at the start of it. Different options. But it's this combination of medications that we're hoping is going to get the job done of getting those eggs to grow. Now, baseline. You might not be suppressed. You might have one follicle that's already leading the way. Well, then our suppression hasn't done its job. We need to switch things up. Two, when you go through the stimulation, we might not be achieving the goal. If I want 16, I know I may not get 16. But if I have 6 growing and 10 not growing, I'm sure as heck not going to get 16. And you would be so surprised how many places don't say a word to their patients and push people through with the 6 eggs. That should be a discussion moment. Maybe we cancel the cycle, maybe we don't. It depends on a lot of scenarios. But you should know, hey, we're only getting 6 eggs to grow. Your antral follicle count was 16. We're only going to get at best 6 mature. Now, based on your age and other factors, that may or may not result in an embryo that's suitable for transfer. I think we can do better than this if we change the protocol. Is that something we want to cancel and change? Or do we want to get these 6 eggs, get something in the freezer, and start again, but do a different protocol then? It's not that it's a clear must cancel, but this is open discussion and communication. Then, when you get the eggs out of the body, how many are mature? What type of trigger shot did you use? What was the interval of the trigger? How many fertilized? What was the type of fertilization? How many grew out in culture? In general, of the mature eggs, you would expect about 75 to 80% to fertilize, half of those to grow out to that blastocyst stage, percentage of genetically normal to be based on your age. If you're 35, 36, that's going to be about 50% normal. And then each normal embryo is going to have approximately a 65% chance of live birth in a frozen embryo transfer, which is really good, way better than nature. Also, notably, not 100. So we're really trying to get as many embryos as we can to give you that really best chance of success in this process, especially if you want to have more than one child. And we really need to think about short-term and long-term goals here, because in some patients, doing an additional cycle before you do a transfer will change the trajectory of their life. We'll give them an extra child. We'll change everything. So your doctor must know your goals. You need to be critically evaluating those cycles, especially if you're not achieving your goals, trying to see what can be done different or better. And when I look at cycles, it's what I see. How many were growing? How many did I expect? How many were in the normal mature range? Well, how many actually ended up being mature? Do I need to push them to a bigger size or a smaller size? Do I need a different trigger med or trigger interval? What can I change along the process? You need to bring what you have to the table. I'm a big believer of you controlling what you can control. So have your best environment to grow these eggs in. Get sleep, decrease inflammation, eat healthy, take vitamins, do what you can control. Do people get pregnant, boozing it up every day? Absolutely. Is that the smartest thing to do when you're going through IVF? It's not. And then when it comes to embryo transfer, there's a few different things to know about that. When it comes to embryo transfer, fresh transfer is that going in after you've just retrieved the eggs. That's by no means natural because very high hormone levels. You have a frozen transfer that's natural, meaning we don't do any meds except typically some progesterone, but we're following your normal ovulation. There's a modified natural, which is my preference over a natural, which is where we tend to get you to ovulate or ovulate more than one, get that lining. This is typically with ovulation induction medications or with gonadotropins. Then we have controlled cycles, which are also called medicated. In the short, we use estrogen to grow the lining. You might suppress with Lupron during that, before that, 1 month, 2 months. This is where, to me, we also want to personalize. Have you had pregnancies before? Have you had losses before? Do you ovulate? Do you have PCOS? Do you have endometriosis or concern for endo or adeno or autoimmune disease? I'm a big fan of Lupron when it comes to adeno or endo or autoimmune, unexplained or recurrent losses. It has been shown to decrease the inflammation of endometriosis and makes a more controlled environment. If we really think one of the issues with some of these inflammatory diseases is that that inflammation is toxic, making it harder for you to get pregnant, the only way I can change that environment is to stop you from ovulating and give you a medication like Lupron to really change that environment before we go and grow the lining or put the embryo inside. But even within that, as I said, there's different options. And then making sure that testing's being done before the transfer. Have you had an evaluation of the uterine cavity? How's your thyroid hormone? Is there anything else that we need to change or adjust before we get into the cycle? And then if you don't have the transfer work, what's the next step? 65% is not 100. So this is a place where it might be very appropriate to say, we're going to do the same thing, and that's okay. But at some point, you're going to start to fall off that curve. So should you try a different protocol? Do you need to check something else? Do you need to have a hysteroscopy? Where do you start going if you get to the place where two or three transfers are not working? So in short, you need to set your team up for success by providing the information you have. Good health history, talk about your goals, provide records or cycles. Your team needs to explain everything to you. This is what our next steps are going to be. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You need to know what comes next and where the boundary lines are. If you do 3 IUIs and you're not pregnant, we're going to have a follow-up. Do IVF, whatever it is. In your IVF cycle, you should know your goals. Everybody's not going to be average. Some people do better, some people do worse, and it doesn't mean your team did bad or was wrong, but it gives a road of expectation so that you can gauge your response. If things are not going the way you want, you need somebody critically evaluating that cycle. It's okay. Your protocol may not be perfect. People are individual. You're sitting here asking for personalized care. And I don't have the magic playbook to know exactly what you need. I'm going to use the data to make my best guess. Honestly, I'm going to evaluate it. And here's the magic. I'm going to evaluate it. And then we're going to make changes once I now have your data and I know how you do. And if somebody's not doing that, no matter how the information's getting to you, if you're doing the exact same thing and you didn't get the result you wanted and nobody's taking the dime to tell you why, that's a red flag. And it's very normal, common to get a second opinion. Last thing here, don't get a second opinion and anticipate that you're going to come back to your doctor and say, here's the protocol Dr. Crawford said. It's not going to work. You don't want somebody running a protocol they don't know also. But if you get a second opinion and that resonates with you more, friend, you best be prepared to pack up and go there for IVF or whatever treatment you're doing. It's often not cost effective to travel across the country for IUIs. So many clinics will say, we only will see out-of-state patients for IVF because for you as a human, we need you to come and be here and we need to help you get pregnant and not waste all your money on airplane travel for something that might have a 5 to 10% chance of success, depending on your scenario. Everybody's different. So be prepared, know your expectations, know the boundaries, think about when to ask or advocate for yourself, and take care of yourself to the best of your ability so that you know you're controlling, putting in the absolute best egg and sperm quality possible. I'm going to answer a few of our questions for fertility's sake. Again, these are asked on Monday at Natalie Crawford MD on Instagram, and I'm going to do a few quick ones here. Do you recommend ovacetol for patients with PCOS? I do like ovacetol or types of inositol, myo or d-chiro for patients with PCOS. It can help with insulin resistance, and I've often seen patients tolerate it a lot better than metformin. So I don't like it for patients who don't have PCOS. So this is one of the things where you might want to wait and make sure you know your diagnosis and see if your doctor personally recommends it or not. What prevents a baby from sticking to the uterine wall? Number one, genetics. It's just not genetically normal. The cells aren't dividing normally, even if it is normal, just doesn't have the competency. If 65% of genetically normal embryos are turning into babies, that means there's something well beyond genetics. Most of it's probably just competency, randomness, environment. So a lot of times it's not anything that is this one thing or another. It's not that you went for a run or that you had pineapple or something. You didn't cause it not to implant. It just doesn't always happen. Can I exercise the week after my embryo transfer? For most patients, yes. I always say, you know, this is the luteal phase. If we're cycle syncing, the luteal phase, when you have this high progesterone, you are in the progestational time. Your body's trying to get ready for that baby. So we don't want to stress it out to think that this is a time not to get pregnant. Not a time to run a marathon. Not a time to be pushing yourself to max exhaustion. But moving your body is always healthy. The exception here is some fresh transfers or modified natural cycles where you had ovarian stimulation. You might be at a torsion risk. And so if your doctor tells you your ovary is really big, so I want you to do lighter activity, like just walking, make sure you listen to their advice. In controlled cycles, specifically when your ovaries are not stimulated at all, there really aren't any restrictions. I just don't want you maxing out or getting new PRs in that time period. What is the typical IVF protocol for a PCOS patient? The typical protocol is called an antagonist. This is the high responder protocol since patients with PCOS tend to have a high egg count. You're going to grow the eggs and then you're going to stop them with an ovulation blocker when they start getting bigger so you don't lose them. I think PCOS patients respond so good when you start with birth control pills. Even if you hate them, they're very effective in PCOS for a couple weeks to synchronize up all of those follicles. You can do a Lupron trigger, which can allow you to get those follicles to a bigger size and not be at risk for ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, but be prepared for a freeze-all approach, whether or not you're doing genetic testing, because that hormone environment is going to get very high throughout the cycle. All right, friends. Well, I hope you found this episode helpful so that you can be the best advocate for your own care and for that of people around you. Fertility care should be a two-way street, meaning I want the best for you, and I know you do as well. So let's set each other up for success. As always, you can get more information over on Instagram at NatalieCrawfordMD. Ask your questions there or call and leave a voicemail at 657-229-3672. And you can follow along on YouTube. Thanks, friends. Thank you all for listening to As a Woman. It would mean so much if you could rate, review, and follow the podcast to be notified of new episodes every Sunday. I hope you learned something new, and I hope you share it with someone in your life. Be sure to follow along on Instagram at NatalieCrawfordMD and check out the YouTube channel NatalieCrawfordMD. If you're interested in becoming a patient, you can also follow Fora Fertility. I'm so thrilled to have you here, part of the community that amplifies others as a woman.
Hey guys, welcome to The Collective. I'm Brianne Helfrich, a 26-year-old bioethics PhD student and clothing brand CEO. Welcome to my podcast, where we talk all things health and wellness, navigating your 20s, and becoming the best version of yourself. So sit down, play that episode, and join the collective.